morning, Coastside. This is Michelle Dragony, a.k.a. the Coastal Butterfly and the Chief Buzz Officer of Coastside Buzz. And I'm sitting here next to Greg Diegas. Who are you, Greg?
Chair of the MCC, and we're in trouble now.
So we have 60 minutes, maybe 58 because we were a little bit late, to entertain you with all kinds of information. And I've never done a radio show before, have you, Greg?
Yes.
Oh, well, perhaps we're sitting in the wrong seat here. Ruben is on his way up from his vacation, and he's probably listening to us right now, so hopefully we mind our P's and Q's. The first thing that we need to do is give us a little nod to Cameron's Pub. My son grew up at Cameron's Pub. I know that sounds bad, but it's such a great place for the family that you can bring your kids on a Monday afternoon at noon, 1 o'clock after library reading. The ladies can have, mommies can have their meal, maybe a beverage, and the kids get to play with the plastic eggs that have little prizes in them. It keeps the kids busy for 45 minutes, and then they're ready for a nap when you go home.
Whatever happened to the big pumpkin?
I don't know. I met the artist. His name's Peter Hazel. And it was at Cameron's brother's place, Granola's, for a while. And it's disappeared. So perhaps Peter Hazel took it back.
And Cameron's is an institution, you know, and it has great comfort food and all kinds of variations and entertainment.
It does. And when your kid's playing baseball and they're a little bit older and they're beyond the egg phase of things, you can bring them to Cameron's for food after their baseball game so you don't have to cook when you get home. So, that's Cameron's, our pub. And so, here we are, the air quality. What do you think, Greg? I didn't have the purple app on my phone, so I'm kind of... I rode my bike here, my bike Rosie. Some people have seen me ride my red bike Rosie. And I can say that the air was wonderful.
Seemed okay to me.
He was inside his car, though.
True.
But when he walked across the street from his car to the radio station, you had a little whiff, right?
Yeah, I didn't breathe.
Oh, well, okay. So now we're inside the studio, and the air quality here is not as good as it is outside, but it's not bad either.
Must be the staff.
Hi, Frank. okay, so...
What's this about a gondola? Are we going to have a ski lift? Are we going to get stranded like I did on the mountain? And, you know, when you're stuck up there for hours while they come to rescue you, you're sitting outdoors and you're...
Did that really happen to you?
Oh, sure, all the time. And my wife was in an accident once where it got so overloaded it ran backwards and people died getting mashed into the wheelhouse at the base of the ski lift. So is that what we're headed for here?
You want to talk about roundabouts now? Well, no. Things are dangerous. Things can be dangerous. But the gondola is actually safer than putting people in cars on a road.
There is that.
And so CCAG, which is what, County and City...
City and County Association of Government.
Thank you, Greg. They basically have said there are no more roads that are going to be built. So... We're not going to widen 92. There's not even enough money, political will, environmental ability to widen 92. And so what we have is the possibility of doing something that they do in Europe. Yeah, I grew up in Europe, and I would go skiing in Switzerland, Austria, French Pyrenees, and they all had gondolas. And you would go from one mountain to the other mountain by gondolas. And yes, they'd get shut down for bad wind weather and stuff like that, but it was just sort of de rigueur. I mean, everybody used it.
Sort of like a fun ride, only instead of ending up in an amusement park, you go out to lunch.
Well, I think that's part of the clientele that the Coast Skyway aerial gondola will serve. We're a tourist town. It's how we make our money. And we make our money on transit occupancy tax, which is also known as TOT. That's 40% of our income. And then we make money on sales tax. And if we don't have people coming here and spending money, then we can't do basic things like stripe our roads. I mean, as you know, Greg...
Or pay for the sewer.
Or grant hunting.
Yeah.
Grant hunting is really our biggest income. And we can avoid more grant hunting if we collect more money.
So why did you bring up the gondola?
So we're making some progress on there was the Coast Skyway Tram X meeting team that was last year, and then Debbie Ruddick was there, Peter Bleichert, Deb Harder Williams, who's really the lead on this, and they were just talking about process and how we might go about it. And the idea is to go from the coast to the trains to the planes. City of Half Moon Bay is not a full service city. We don't have any money to do anything like this, but we can offer a landing space. Peter Bleichert, who originated this, he's a San Mateo CSM professor. He and his family like to come over to the beach, and he landed the Skyway at St. Francis Beach on the state parks. And from a business perspective for Half Moon Bay, that doesn't do anything for us. So we want it to land in Half Moon Bay near Main Street, if not on Main Street. So there's this little plot of land that sits there at Highway 1 and 92 that we look at every day. It just was mowed recently. Well, a friend of a friend who plays at a poker game around town told me that people were talking about the gondola at the game. And I said to a friend who was at the game, well, could you ask the gentleman who owns the property if he might be willing to entertain the idea of having the Coast Skyway aerial gondola land right there? And Crystalline Geet, the head of the chamber, I worked with her on asking her, well, where would you like it to land? And she said, that would be a great place. So the owner of the land is willing to negotiate with the process. A letter of interest is what we're looking for. And the process that we're at right now is the City of Half Moon Bay, during their priority setting sessions, the City Council is very conservative monetarily, taking on bigger projects. But transportation is one of the five top priorities. And if the gondola can take people off of the road, and the City of Half Moon Bay, we would pay for the feasibility study, not all of it, but just a small portion of it. And the big players are the city of San Mateo. So Deb Harder Williams, she was at an event where Anna Eshoo was at the Boys and the Girls Club giving a speech, and she walked up to our congressional representative and asked her, where could we land the Coast Skyway gondola?
So the other end of this is going to be in San Mateo City?
And Anna Eshoo said, Hayward Park.
Okay.
It's right on the Caltrain. It's right near Hillsdale. And it's in the city of San Mateo. Now, the city of San Mateo, they have money. And the gondola would also stop at CSM.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Now, that would be useful. You can get your hair done cheap, you know, at the at the school up there. You know, my wife does that.
Mm-hmm. And people could get to the pool, you know, in the workout area. It's a pretty good deal. They've got a great sports center there. Kids could go to school. Water polo team could take the tram to CSM for their practice, and their parents wouldn't have to wait in the car for 2 hours, having done that. Team players could take the tram to the train and take an Uber to wherever they need to go from over the hill. Because right now what the kids have to do, and my son's 24, so this was a few years ago, but 8 years ago, you would have to drive over early in the morning to avoid the traffic. And then you'd sit around waiting for your game. And then you'd have to, after your game, you'd go out and get something to eat. And then you'd kill some time waiting to come home because of the traffic.
So my wife and her sister, when she was out here with us, they went to CSM to get one of those cheap hair things at the school.
Yeah, yeah.
It took them 2 hours. And we live in Montero, of course. So
to drive?
No, bus.
Oh.
Okay. So yeah. Now, how long would this thing take, you know, when you get into it, you know, to get over to Hayward Park?
And that depends on a lot of things. It depends on how many. So there's three kinds of trams or gondolas. There's the one that you have at Heavenly, which is two large gondolas, and they they are oppositionally each other. One is at one end, and they meet each other in the middle, and they go past each other, and they're weighted against each other. That's one kind. The other kind is the actual chairlift that you were talking about. And there's an intermediary kind that you might see at Disneyland. They're enclosed, and they may hold between, you know, 10 to 20 people.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, some of the large ski areas, you can put 30 people into those things. Yeah.
And, you know, there's space for you to, you know, hold your skis and stuff like that. And we would assume that the gondolas would be designed so that people, you know, coming from the airport, you know, that they want to get to the Ritz or the Oceano. So one of the things that will happen when the gondola lands in Half Moon Bay is that we'll finally have an Uber and Lyft economy. The whole idea is to get people out of cars.
Could people put their bikes on the tram?
Yes.
Okay, there you go.
And you're going to have to be able to put igloos, things like that. The gondolas can be... the gondolas go around, and then they kind of get ganged up at the end of each side. And you can take one gondola out and put somebody in a wheelchair on the gondola, and then put them back into the gondola line.
Well, so not to bring up a sore subject, but... speaking of high-speed rail in California, does anybody ever figured out, you know, what the return on passenger is going to be? I mean, the cost efficiency of this thing?
So that's what a feasibility study does. And if you go to Coastside Buzz and just put in gondola, you'll see plenty of information on it. Tampa just completed a feasibility study for a gondola sort of system. It's going between St. Petersburg and Clearwater, I think. And the feasibility study cost $600,000. And we don't have that kind of money in Half Moon Bay, but we do have very smart people on our city council, like Debbie Ruddick, and she is ex-California Coastal Conservancy. And the Conservancy's mission is to create and maintain access along the coast, but also to the coast. And so she thinks that the Conservancy will be interested in providing a grant for such a study.
Well, in the interest of causing trouble here.
Of course.
Speaking of feasibility studies, I don't know if you remember that the MCC just had a telecommunications work group do a communications study, and I'd probably surprise everybody listening to know that we have lousy cell service and internet service here. And so one of the things that came out as a recommendation, I mean, you can either wait for the oligopoly to fix itself, which doesn't seem to work, or you can form your own community fiber network, which in our research we've discovered has been done hundreds of times throughout the country, even in the face of opposition by the oligopoly passing state laws to make it harder. Something like 86% of the landmass in South Dakota and 56% in North Dakota is served by community fiber networks. Mm-hmm. So Leo Gomez, you know, and I are thinking, hey, why don't we have a community fiber network? Mm-hmm. But in order to do that, you need a, drum roll please, feasibility study.
That's right.
And that one would cost something in the neighborhood of $70,000, whatever. But the payback would be, if such a venture were formed, and if we take Woodstock, Vermont, population 3,000 as an example, we would get 1 gigabit speeds.
Yeah.
Okay, and much more reliable than what we're getting
right
now. 1 gigabit
upload and download.
Yes, it's called symmetrical.
Yes, we would become a creator economy. Right now, we're a user economy. There's a really good book called Fiber, and it's written by Susan Crawford. Mm-hmm. And it's probably about 8 years old, and I remember I shopped it around.
This isn't a diet book, is it?
No. This is a really cool book. And that, actually, I was talking about community networks back then when I was trying. Matthew Chittister, he's very, very interested in fiber. There's a rumor that there's a conduit that goes down Main Street, and we've heard it over and over again. And there was a period during that BTWID lawsuit, our staff went down to 11, I think it was, and we had half-time public work. So that information seems to have been lost. But the idea is, if we could put fiber right down Main Street, that would solve a lot of problems. Now, they are going to be putting in a one of those fake antenna trees
Yes, this is one of the, Leo had that in the report, you can see.
There's going to be one on Kelly, and there's also going to be one up at the high school.
So that's for cell service though, right?
Correct. Right. Correct.
Well, so the reason I brought this up is there's an opportunity cost to this gondola and to $600,000 feasibility study. Mm-hmm. And I don't know the suite of things that Half Moon Bay has on its plate. I saw that chart, you remember the green and yellow cells all covered and all their priorities. But one question for the residents would be, would you rather spend $7,500 on a feasibility study for a community fiber network, which, if you look at what happened in East Central Vermont, will pay for itself by year three, because we'd be displacing. So it's not like a permanent burden on the taxpayers. It's,
oh, yeah. It,
okay. Or would you rather have a gondola? I don't know what the economics of the gondola would be.
I don't think there's more. I think you're jurisdictionally challenged in that regard.
Could be.
I mean, the county is going to have to fund a feasibility study for the coast side. I mean, Half Moon Bay doesn't have the money for that.
For the gondola or for the...
For the feasibility study.
Or for the telecommunications?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, well, I did ask Ray for that at the... the retreat, the Mid-Coast Community Council, of course, he can't commit, but we asked for that feasibility study, and by the way, another one, which you could call a feasibility study, but the master plan for stormwater, because we don't seem to have one. Drum roll, please.
Yeah, no, that's one of the things that people don't understand is the coast side was unincorporated. So back in 1959, when Half Moon Bay was incorporated, Half Moon Bay looked at the up coast, and they were like, they have no infrastructure.
Yeah.
And so that's, and the county's never really invested in infrastructure. As houses have been built, they didn't have stormwater plans with each house and things like that. So, but the only way that you're going to solve that is through some sort of an assessment district. In other words, you've got to tax yourself to solve the problem.
Well, that's an interesting thought. What I'm hearing from residents who are suffering from stormwater problems is we've been paying taxes to the county for and decades. They permitted this construction. They even collect a fee for stormwater, but they haven't been spending it, one guesses. I don't know. I don't have an accounting for the fund. I'm asking for how much money have we collected, where's it been going, have they sized the amount of money properly? One guesses not. But so the opinion of people who are stuck downstream in flooding is, you permitted this. You owe us the system, and then we have to pay to maintain it, but you should have been building this all along. So there's a liability issue there. Coming back and saying, oh, and you got to pay for all this. Well, you created all this uphill problem. Look at Pacifica. They've got rivers running down their streets because they've built so much impermeable surfaces. So this legacy of construction of impermeable surfaces combined with the climate crisis has caught up with us now.
That's right.
So, yeah. Anyway, so I don't know. I don't want to interrupt your gondola discussion, but I just wanted to point out there's an opportunity cost. Mm-hmm. You're going to do X instead of Y or whatever. And to your point about asking the county for money, sure, we will.
Well, I think for communications, it's going to be the county.
Yeah.
Again, City of Half Moon Bay would, maybe they would chip in a little bit, you know, which is kind of how the gondola, this is the, you know, the priority session. You know, Deborah Penrose was really not wanting to fund it at all because of what you were saying. You know, it's just like, this is a deep hole. But Debbie Ruddick was like, well, I think we can get a grant for this.
She's good at that.
So yeah. And then Matthew Chittister has been in transportation in the county before he came back here. And he grew up here. He's the city manager. He loves the idea.
So, good.
So what we were given direction by the council that staff could put a little bit of time into it. And that's it.
Well, I mean, as long as it's going to pay for itself or break even, how would you object? You'd be adding a feature.
Well, we don't know that until we do a feasibility study. And I don't know of a transportation authority, whether it's a bus, a train, a plane, or whatever, planes are supposed to make a profit. But most of the transportation authorities are not. They're not profit centers. They're loss centers.
So there you go.
So, well, it's kind of like medical care is a loss center. You know, I mean, there's things that sometimes the state and the government have to help, you know, the larger population do. And if you want to get people out of cars, you have to create some other way to do that. So Uber and Lyft and Zoox, which are autonomous cars, and just to be clear, Uber and Lyft were never meant to have drivers in their cars. That was just an intermediary business model to get us to the...
The burden the transportation poses in terms of pollution is going to be... drastically reduce?
Well, it'll be even further drastically reduced because you won't have asphalt.
Ooh.
Ooh. Yeah. And you won't have... Thank you, Frank.
A good one. Okay, Frank.
I think the ability to create a gondola network, so I think the coast to the trains to the plains can also go from Half Moon Bay to Pacifica through the Martini Bypass.
Ooh.
Mm, to Pacifica and then to Colma. And now you've got a loop.
All right.
So the biggest problem that we have right now is the San Francisco Public Utilities, SFPUC, right?
No, that's not the biggest problem we have.
Yes,
right now.
It is for right now. It is because they may not let us. The reason why we don't have four lanes at Crystal Springs is because the SFPUC said no. They said no.
Well, I'm stepping back and taking a bigger picture. I'm saying our biggest problems are water supply and sewage.
No, I mean in this project.
In this project.
In this particular project. So the question becomes, will the SFPUC engage with us? And I emailed Steve Ritchie, who's the assistant general manager, right? Yeah, in a mountain that we talked about.
Right.
And Tim Ramirez, who's the resource coordinator for the whole watershed.
You're still mad about them taking the top off your mountain, aren't you?
No, not at all. I mean, they had to put it back.
Have they put it back?
Well,
I haven't heard that.
They stopped taking the top of the mountain off. So let's allude to this a little more accurately. The SFPUC was going to put a weather station there, which is a great thing. But the San Mateo County Planning Commission said 5-0, no, you can't do that to the top of Montero Mountain. And the supervisors said 5-0, no. And the SFPUC, they thought that they would just do it anyway.
Yes, they did.
and then, what did you do, Greg?
Well, I mean, a bunch of us, it wasn't me, there was bunch of people went up there and saw the damage and raised a stink, and Montero Water and Sanitary District helped with this. Yeah.
Oh, that's because Clemens follows Coastside Buzz, and he saw us talking about that, and there was a teeny little triangle of their project in Montero Water and Sanitary
District.
Yes, so Clemens.
Yeah. Nothing like having a focused group of local control people who take care of things for you.
Yeah, well, Clemens lives here. He's been with the district since as a level one operator. Now he's a general manager. You know, he married a local girl. So, and he's a German engineer, so he's careful about things. Anyway, he invited a fellow engineer, Steve Ritchie, up to the top of the mountain to talk to him, engineer to engineer. And the Open BSF Watershed people, they have an old Facebook feed. I think it's during COVID it went away, but they all walked up there together, and they looked down at the California Coastal Highway.
Oops! It's in the coastal zone.
And checkmate. So, you know, apologetically, maybe it cost some money for the SFPUC to start the project, but they had to stop it. And there is another place for the weather station, so it didn't have to go there. Who knows why they did it the way they did it, but.
Well, I do have news on Montero Mountain that I should mention to our listeners. It's going to be closed for a while.
That's right.
Because we got a call at the MCC, a couple of weeks ago, and Department of Emergency Management was calling me to say, we can't get fuel up to the top of the mountain for the backup generators, and if the power goes out, as, you know, it happens around here,
That's right? That's right.
Because of our unreliable PG&E service. So, we were asked, would we have a problem with them repaving the road to get the fuel up there so that we didn't lose all communications on the coast? And we said, no, we wouldn't have a problem, but do a good job. And so they're going to do a good job, and starting on May 30th, they're going to shut down that road, which is unsafe for utility vehicles right now. And in fact, a few years back, they actually had an accident trying to get up there when it was too muddy.
Yeah.
So they're going to be able to fix the road somewhere between May 30th and June 9th, and nobody's going to be allowed up there. And then we're going to have the same crew that inspected, you know, like Clemens and I can't remember all the folks who helped.
Andy Howes.
Yeah.
Mark Verlander.
Mark Verlander was one of them, yeah.
And Sean Handel.
Oh, well, there's more than that. But yeah.
Those are the three main guys.
Right,
that,
and,
you know.
And so we're going to have to go up and see what they did and, you know, trust but verify. They're,
mm-hmm.
they're being environmentally sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
So I just thought, since you're talking about the top of Montero Mountain, you know, let's go take a look and see if they put it back yet.
Yeah,
in the meanwhile, you have something to say, Michelle?
Oh, thank you, Greg. A little ADD there going on. Thank you, Frank. So if you'd like to call in and talk to us, 650-560-9851. That is 650-560-9851.
I don't think we want people to just call in and talk. We want them to ask thoughtful and provocative questions that we can riff on for extended periods.
That would be fun. So call in and let us riff. I know, Amy, you were thinking about it. let's finish the gondola.
Go ahead. Back to the gondola.
So we have Anna Issue has given us a letter of interest in writing. Ray Mueller has said he will talk to the city of San Mateo to get a letter of interest in writing. And we have permission by the city to put in a little staff time. And the gondoliers are doing a lot of the legwork. I mean, I'm trying to put the SFPUC in the room with the city and with the county. And actually, I was at a coffee clatch at Metzaluna a few weeks ago, and Ray came. It was the first coffee clatch that they had, and Deborah Penrose was there, our mayor. And, you know, Ray walked into the Metzaluna, you know, outside area, and he said hello to everybody, and he saw Matt OJ and Joyce Logan, who are two of the gondoliers, sitting with me at a table. And he walks over, and he graciously sat down, and he talked to us for about 5, maybe 10 minutes. And, you know, I gave him the pitch and the update, and he basically said, oh, that's great. I'll help you. Boom. So we've got people that are willing to explore it. It's totally at the conceptual exploration phase. The SFP, you could say, no way, and then we're dead in the water. However, I might give London Breed a call and ask her if she might think that going from the coast to the trains to the plains might be useful for the city of San Francisco.
Interesting. A lot of people don't go into San Francisco these days.
Yeah, but they come out.
Yeah.
And they come towards us because we are a great place to visit in Half Moon Bay. And and then there's also the city down south called San Jose.
Heard of them.
Yeah, I mean, you can go from your house, get on an Uber, take the tram, beautiful morning, get on your train, and get on your plane.
And if they could fit those gondolas with cappuccino makers.
Well, I think a cappuccino maker would probably be at the beginning and the end
at
each of the things. And this is one of the things, too, in terms of making money. It depends on, again, what people want to do. But at Skyline, you know, where you're going to have one of the stanchions there, because that's going to be the top of the mountain, and there's this parking lot right there that's very close to where there's going to be bus shuttles, where they're extending the Crystal Springs path, and then south towards Purisima, there's going to be shuttles there. So there's a lot of stuff going on because of Purisima Creek being closed because of the trees and the bad roads and all that kind of thing, and because of Big Basin burning, the state parks and the county parks are looking at a different way of humans interfacing in these areas, and they're taking a lot of the parking out of the parks, and they're doing what they do at John Muir. You know, you have a parking lot that's somewhere away, and then there's a shuttle that takes you in.
Yeah.
So that's sort of like the model that we're going to have. But if you had a big conference center at the top right there, and a wedding, you know, I mean, that's not City of Half Moon Bay, though.
Well, it's...
That's county.
It's creative, and I know Harvey Rohrbach likes this idea, and I think it's certainly worth studying. But $600,000 for that study, as opposed to...
I don't know. That's just what Tampa paid.
Okay.
Tampa is a multi-metropolitan, you know, system that they're between two cities.
But if everybody in the chain pays a share to study the problem, I think that's great. My caution would be the old adage of what does a memorial park bench, a perpetual memorial park bench for a favored community leader who's passed on, what does that cost? And the answer is if it's a perpetual bench, the cost is infinite. Because sooner or later the slats are going to need to be painted and then they're going to wear out and need to be replaced and then the iron on the sides is going to rust and you're going to have to... So anything you create that's the spirit of a public works is a perpetual burden. So it's got to have some kind of sustenance, meaning revenue, to feed it. And that's why, to me, community fiber is going to pay for itself, right? I don't know how the gondola is going to work out, but that's the thing I would look for. You're adding to the asset burden... and cities already have a problem funding the essential infrastructure that they need.
Well, Ray says the lead agency would be the SMTAA, the San Mateo Transportation Authority. There's also the possibility that Caltrain might want to be the lead authority because they want more people to ride their train. And I can't speak for the rest of, you know, the California train system, but if you can get from San Jose to San Francisco easily, and there's almost no east-west, Highway 80.
That's true.
There's no east west. So this is and again this I'm not this is not me being smart. I'm listening to Debbie Penrose and Debbie Ruddick and you know Harvey. Oh, and Mike Ferreira. I mean, we've sat down and we've talked with all the people who are going to say no and say tell us why, and what you know because let's fail fast, you know, let's fail fast. You know, if this doesn't work, nobody likes it, then okay, we'll go away and we'll go talk about fiber.
Well, so.
I think we can do both. I don't think we should.
Riddle me this then, though. How are we going to support this piece of infrastructure when Half Moon Bay isn't even willing to pay for the sewer system?
It will not be Half Moon Bay. I can't say that clearly enough. Half Moon Bay does not have the money. We offer them a landing place on a private piece of property that a human being, that is a Half Moon Bay citizen, is you know, willing to negotiate with us. So Peter Bleichert is an ancestor of the late 1800s invention of roped wire, and it was first used in mining. So it's a Swiss family. Doppelmayr, I think, is the company which is associated, and they want to be here. They want to get into California, and so this is a great opportunity for them to experiment in California if we can get the cooperation of people like Anna Eshoo. I mean, Anna Eshoo just helped us out. You missed a scoop on the tunnel.
I did.
The tunnel cable. So, you want to tell the story? Because,
well, I'm not sure what the story is there. I know Ray worked with Anna and a bunch of people to talk about getting additional connection for Comcast to come through the Lantos tunnel.
Yes.
And the problem is that Comcast only had one link on Highway 84, which kept getting wiped out by trees falling and the power outages, and that's one of our vulnerabilities. But there's more that needs to be done. There's two ways you could go in this. Sure, it's great if they can give Comcast access through the tunnel, but that's coax cable. That's not fiber.
Ray said it was a conduit, so that means you can put anything in through it.
Exactly. And, right. And there's also something called the State Middle Mile Broadband Initiative, which already has maps showing that they're going to run fiber down through Pacifica, down to us, and possibly, although it's lower priority, along Highway 92. That would solve the redundancy problem, and it would solve the performance problem, enabling speeds up to 10 gigabits, but nobody's going to get that. They'll pay for 1 gigabit and help with our communications infrastructure. But just giving Comcast a piece of coax cable doesn't solve the fact that, according to our report, their network architecture is bad. They have a serially linked network with a lot of interdependencies, and when one link in the chain fails, everybody downstream of the failed link loses stuff. The fact that there aren't backup batteries and backup generators in all the places they should have, they're not following the CPUC guidelines.
Although it's better now, right, since the fires?
Well, Leo has reported AT&T, for instance, was surprised when he pointed out that they didn't have batteries working, because they thought they did. And so in one installation, they've added batteries. But, you know, we're picking away at an oligopoly that just isn't motivated to be responsive because it costs them money to do the right thing. And the CPUC has only issued guidelines and not enforced them. So, great if we can get a cable through for Comcast, but what we really need is a fiber cable, and it's really time to move on. We have second world...
Are you sure that it's not a fiber cable?
Well, there's a debate. Leo thinks AT&T has a fiber cable through it already. I don't know if it's a Homeland Security...
That's what I heard.
I don't know if it's a Homeland Security issue that nobody wants to discuss, but I've talked to the AT&T
people. I heard that's
people.
A rumor, and it's not true.
Okay.
It's a complete red herring.
All right.
It's what they told us, but it's not true. So go back into 2019, when we had an outage. We had all of the muckety mucks, Jerry Hill, Horsley, and that was at the high school. And I just reposted that within the post regarding this progress that we've made of getting the wire through the tunnel, the cable through the tunnel. And it's been since then that we've been trying to find out why we don't have a wire through the tunnel. And they told us a bunch of different things.
Yeah. Well, so. AT&T doesn't fail as often as Comcast does. So that's one of the big clues that AT&T does have a loop through Pacifica. But nobody seems to admit it, although I've talked to AT&T technicians in the field. Mm-hmm. And they say, oh, yeah, we run fiber up to those sheds south of the tunnel. Mm-hmm. And that's where all the monitors, they're on our fiber. Mm-hmm. Well, so they've already got the fiber within 150 yards of the tunnel. Mm-hmm. And there's boxes on either side of the
yep.
tunnel that say AT&T.
Yep.
And we're not allowed to open those boxes, but, you know, there's phones in the tunnel. So there's definitely stuff already going through. The question is it fiber or not? And the other question is getting an extra coax cable really the right thing? I know that this middle mile broadband initiative is going to happen. And the reason I know it, I've attended the middle mile broadband advisory council. They have to commit to spending all this money, mm-hmm. federal money, by the end mm-hmm. of 2024. And they have to actually spend it mm-hmm. by the end of 2026. And right. Matt Chittister and I both attended a Caltrans presentation about a year ago where they said, oh, we're going to put some fiber under Highway 1 by 2026. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, I think that stuff is going to happen. And I think we just need to be ready to capitalize on it and be able to take that fiber and bring it into the neighborhoods of what's called fiber to the premises. So, I mean, I don't want to wax on about it, but
no,
I think the health and safety issue, telecommunications is our biggest problem. Right. And if we fix the internet, we substantially fix the phone service, even if the cellular providers don't clean up their act. If everybody has internet in their home that works, they can do voice over IP and use their phones on their in their home by connecting to their internet. So I view that as a reasonable priority.
And if you were going to just put these two projects, you know, communications versus the gondola head to head, just on a theoretical basis, I would pick communications because it's life threatening. I mean, we don't have communications to call 911. I mean, we basically don't have civilization. The gondola is important. I think it will alleviate a lot of traffic, which is an important issue. But I think the funding sources and the mechanisms and procedures are in completely different jurisdictions. So I don't think that they're really in competition
it's
with each
other.
It's
parallel, yeah. I agree with you.
Okay. I just want to make sure everybody out there understands that, you know, it really isn't a competition between those two things. But it's good to take two. I mean, Greg and I like to think about things. And that's what we're doing. We're just doing it on the radio in front of everybody. So,
we're not going to talk about the big news last night?
Go ahead.
Did anybody notice that Montero Water and Sanitary District passed a resolution which basically says, I have to be careful here because I don't have it in front of me, but it says if Half Moon Bay isn't going to pay for their share of the sewer system, then they're going to be liable for all the damages and spills that occur. I mean, they actually get mad up in Montero now, aren't they?
Well, I think everybody's mad, and I honestly have been following this story for a long time, and I just don't understand it. I really don't understand.
Well, so just as a little bit of background, and you know some of this better than I do, but I have some good quotes. Montero had a perfectly good working sanitary sewer system with modern technology back in the 70s. And El Granada and Half Moon Bay were failing. And as you pointed out, the federal government said in 1972, you guys stop polluting. Now, it wasn't Montero that was polluting. It was El Granada and Half Moon Bay. You need to replace the plant. And so somewhere in there, the county and state got involved, and they forced Montara to abandon their sewer plant. And there's a great quote I found in the 1976 testimony while they were preparing to do this and get the grant. Robert Magnesco said, expressed astonishment that we would throw away a perfectly good working sewer plant at 50% of capacity and pump the sewage 9 miles south for treatment. Well, that's what they made us do. And there was a debate about should we use the Montara plant and pump the sewage uphill, or should we use the plant down where Happen Bay was and pump the sewage that way. It's uphill and then downhill. There's a hump that it has to go. So they formed this thing, and that was an integrated system, including storage for wet weather system overflows up in Montara.
Mm-hmm. Walker tank, right?
Yeah, the Walker tank was converted into that. And since then, they've added more wet weather storage along this intertie pipeline system is the thing Happen Bay doesn't want to pay for.
400,000 gallons, El Granada?
Well, they added 200,000. When I say they, Montara and Granada paid for the first 200,000 of extra on their own because they couldn't get Happen Bay to agree, and they knew we needed it. And then about 2 years ago, we had a discussion about adding more. Half Moon Bay didn't want to pay to add 400,000 more gallons. They only agreed to 200,000 more gallons. And within 45 days of installing it, we had the storms of October 25th, 2021, and we came within 6 inches of overflowing. We should have put the 400,000 gallons in. And I don't know if having that extra 200,000 gallons would have helped prevent the problems that caused the pipes to pop when we held the flows back from the north so that the plant wouldn't fail, which it almost did both of the last two Decembers. It's been overwhelmed and exceeded capacity. And I don't know if you went there and saw the flooding, but it was absolutely incredible that they didn't lose the electrical building and the plant wasn't shut down for the better part of a year. And I don't know what would have happened. Do we all have to stop flushing if we lose the plant? But at any rate, it's an integrated system. Half Moon Bay signed an agreement that says they'll pay for it. They sued to not pay for their share of the integrated system and lost the lawsuit, and now they're appealing, and now they're not approving the budget at SAM. And one of the key claims, and I want to point this out, they're saying that Half Moon Bay gets no benefit. Well, that's a key error.
Well, that has nothing to do with the lawsuit.
It does. It's the key claim in the lawsuit. They're saying we get no benefit. And Debbie Penrose just had an article on Half Moon Bay Review this week, said they get no benefit. Well, for starters, what's called the cherry stem of Half Moon Bay property that goes up Sam's Chowder House on the harbor, that's Half Moon Bay. Mm-hmm. They're on the intertie pipeline system. Mm-hmm. They use Granada Community Services District's sewer collection system, okay, which feeds in the intertie pipeline system. Frenchman's Creek is part of Half Moon Bay. It's on the intertie pipeline system. Marada's part of Half Moon Bay. It's on the intertie pipeline system. So, in essence, Half Moon Bay, with that lawsuit, sued its own people in those neighborhoods, and they're using the plant. Plus, the only wet weather storage in the system is upstream in the intertie pipeline system. Half Moon Bay has none, and the ability to shut off the flows from the north has rescued the plant many times. And there's other benefits, too, but I just wanted to get it out there that it's absolutely a fiction that Half Moon Bay gets no benefit. The major benefit is they got a new sewer plant 50 years ago because of everybody joining together to pay for it.
Right.
But in addition, their own residents are on the intertie pipeline system, and it benefits in terms of the reliability of the system, the ability to do maintenance by shutting off flows, mm-hmm. etc. But they don't want to pay. And now Montara's gotten, I guess, really angry. What came out, did you notice? The attorney's fees.
Yes.
$600,000 in Montara. One has to assume $600,000 in El Granada. Mm-hmm. And I did an analysis in an article I published in your Coastside Buzz. Well, I did several articles on this a few years ago showing Half Moon Bay probably spent about $1 million. I audited 5 years of warrant reports, and I plotted the attorney's fees over time. You can see this big bulge come up when the lawsuit hit in 2017 and thereafter. Mm-hmm. So we're probably wasted $2 million that could have gone into, drum roll please, the intertie pipeline system, okay? You know, we could have spent that on infrastructure.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, before telecommunications, before gondolas, to me...
Oh, sewer is the most important.
Water and sewer,
absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. In fact, there's a podcast that I listened to a few years ago, and it talked about It was the history of sewers, and it just sort of was saying the most important job in the world is the sewer system.
Really?
Absolutely. We would all die without proper sewage control.
Okay.
I mean, when you think about that, you know.
All right. Well, so I just wanted to get that out there, that this dispute is coming back again. And
I was raised my dad was Australian, I got taken to the hospital when I was 14 or 15. I had a fever, and they took out my appendix because they thought that was what it was wrong. It turned out I had a cut on my knee, and I had blood poisoning, and they put in this, like, 4-inch drain to my groin and left me with a scar from taking the appendix out. It wasn't from the same place, and it was like monster mash down there. And I said to my dad, they didn't do a very good job. Aren't you going to sue them? And I'm 15 years old, and my dad looks at me and goes, what's the matter with you? And I go, well, they did something wrong. Don't they have to pay for it? And he goes, oh, no. They saved your life. They're human. You know, you're alive.
There's another line, which is, everybody, you win or lose in the jungle, everybody loses in court.
I think that was my dad was trying to say is, you know, sometimes you just have to accept, you know, what happens to you.
All right. Kind of so thing. I think we have a caller here.
All right. We have a caller. Hello.
Hey, Michelle. It's Julie Mel.
Well, hello there, Julie Mel. How are you?
I can't stop you. I'm hearing the echo of you. But I just want to say you're killing it.
Oh,
your conversations are super interesting.
Good.
Thank you. And we're very excited about the prospect of, I'm trying to turn the radio off, sorry. We're very excited about the prospect of a gondola. I think it's going to be great for infrastructure and traffic. I think if we do it right and we get electric buses to go up and down the coast,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
to carry people, mm-hmm. I assume that's part of the plan.
Yeah, I was sitting with Crystalyn and, you know, talking about having buses, you know, do a route from where the gondola is, you know, along the highway, along Main Street, you know, kind of in a loop. Yeah. And then getting
up
the
and
buses,
down the coast.
Getting a bus to go down to Pescadero would be more of a SamTrans task, but one would hope that SamTrans would be on board with coordinating with that type of thing. Yeah,
just get a fleet of them that literally just go north and south all day.
That's right. Yeah.
Along the way.
Right.
Let people off at the bars and at the restaurants and at the downtown Half Moon Bay and, you know, the beaches.
It's, absolutely.
It's brilliant, and it's long overdue. Plus, it'll be its own tourist attraction.
I think that's it. Yeah, I think it will be its own tourist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's great.
Well, thank you for your support, Julie. That's nice. So what's the latest on for your movies this
weekend?
Beach
Break?
Yes, Beach Break.
We have... we're doing Saturday drive-ins at Lindemar.
What's
we're
up?
Showing
What's
Raiders
up this
of the
weekend?
Lost Ark
oh.
on the first Saturday.
Nice.
So Saturday is it the first? we'll be showing Raiders of the Lost Ark, and then the following Friday. So the I should have the dates in my head, but I don't. The 9th, maybe,
okay.
at San Benito House, and we're gonna pair up with one of their distributors who's going to make a special drink for John Wick.
Ooh,
so
wow.
It'll be summer for all, and we hope that everyone comes and supports San Benito House and supports us. And
well, I see the pictures that you take of all the people there. Man, it's a big turnout. They're all in their little chairs with their blankies, and
it's pretty
very
fun.
Cool. Very
if
cool.
If you haven't been yet, it's pretty fun. And we're partnering for the next 3 months with the Boys and Girls Club. So they'll be supporting us with their volunteers, and
cool.
in exchange, a portion of the profits go to the Boys and Girls Club.
Cool. And you're doing a gaming thing at the front end of your right? Or you did it once,
we
or
have tried it.
Mm-hmm.
We're in the works of designing a game that can be played on the big screen, but it's
Interesting.
It may not happen this week. We did live stream the Warriors last time, but then we just kind of took a vote, and everyone was okay with us turning it off at 8:30, and we started Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Oh, nice.
It was great fun. But it was fun to have the game live on the big screen, and then it was great, you know, a fun. It's a fun, feel-good movie. I forgot.
Oh, that's awesome. You keep growing, Julie. That's wonderful.
Thanks. And the kudos and shout-out to the Jazz Fest downtown.
Wasn't that fun?
I thought it was great.
And yeah. I know I read in the paper, in the Half Moon Bay Review, only $66 a year. Please subscribe. They did a really nice recap on the Jazz and Wine Festival. And I think Colleen and Henny is going to make this even bigger as years go on. And
That's and now kind of, we need that in Half Moon Bay. People want to come to the film festival in December.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and wouldn't it be nice if they could come from there? They fly here for the film festival, and then they get on the train, and then they get on the gondola.
Yeah, give me a few years. We're going to grow it, and we're going to expand.
I think
you
somebody has an agenda
any
here.
One of the venues in order to you'll be able to go from venue to venue on the electric buses that take you from the gondola or from the airport.
So you had one venue. Didn't you have two venues last year?
No, we partner with the Coastal Rep Theater.
Right.
They're our fiscal sponsor. And this year we'll do the same. So December 28th, 29th, and 30th, and it'll be at the Coastal Rep. And then we'll see, because we're definitely growing and figuring out the long-term game plan. So, we'll have other venues.
Can't wait to see what you're going to do next.
Thanks. We just got a great sponsorship grant from the San Mateo County Arts Council. So
really? Wow.
Friday morning of the December, it's a long ways off, but December 29th, mm-hmm. we will be able to open the doors free to the community to have a kids' film.
Aww.
Which will be really fun.
Oh, that's nice. That's really good.
So we'll start promoting that once we have solidified the film.
All right. Well, you get that up on the Coastside Buzz calendar.
Yeah.
It's free and self-submit.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for today. It's a great conversation, and you're both doing great.
Thanks a lot. Well, we've got five more minutes, so thanks, Julie. We'll talk to you
have
later.
A good day.
One last thing that I think. I know it's a little bit in the MCC purview, but it's the harbor breakwater.
Oh, yeah, One Shoreline. I read it's going to propose removing the breakwaters, and that will, I'm told, I haven't studied this yet, help replenish the sand and the erosion. One of the unintended consequences of the Army Corps of Engineers installing this stuff in the mm-hmm. 60s was what's happening down in, it's affected Medio Creek, the bridge, and the Miramar restaurant, I don't know, you realize has had wave breaking through the glasses a couple of times in the last few years. So that's an interesting trade-off. That raises the question of, what about the harbor?
You're a sailor. So one of the comments that happened during the meeting, which was fascinating, you can go to the Harbor District website for the meeting that was on Wednesday, or you can go to Coastside Buzz. It's in the home feed right there. And watch the video and look at the presentation. Listen to the comments that the commissioners had. It's a very interesting project. I have no idea where it's going to go or how it's going to end up, but it's good for everybody to listen, you know, and understand what they're trying to do. But One Shoreline is actually San Mateo County Flooding and Sea Level Rise Assessment District?
Well, yeah, they have four districts, I believe, were combined to form this, and they have a law that was passed granting them the oversight of sea level rise and flooding in the county.
Right. And so their goal, they've been very active on the bay side. They sort of left us alone because the immediate, the infrastructure on the
Wait
bay.
Wait a minute, there's a theme there. They've left us alone and spent all the money on the bayside? Okay.
I know.
There you go.
I know.
All right.
But they did start the conversation a couple of years ago, like in 2019. But I remember last year, the harbor commissioners were not informed about their plans, and they took some umbrage. You know, I keep telling people, you know, if you want to make something work on the coast side, you have to invite all of the fairy godmothers up front, willingly.
Do you have a fairy godmother?
But, you know, I think, you know, and again, listen to the discussion. It is an important one for the coast side. It will affect a lot of people in a lot of different ways. The sailors were talking about Ed Lorenas, who is, used to be on the Harbor District, and now he's also a surf rider, but he's also a big sailor. He said getting in with a south, you know, storm, he said that'll be almost impossible. So it won't be a safe harbor anymore. That was the contention.
Well, so I've sailed over there a bunch of times, and then, you know, we've gone down to Monterey and Santa Cruz, and it's already a little bit treacherous. You know, the rocks that extend down from the golf ball, you know, and Mavericks. And so I could understand that it might not be a safe place to come in on certain conditions. It's already, you have to be very careful getting in and out of Half Moon Bay. But I think, you know, as a society, we have to ask, how much do we want to pay to have a harbor? You know, is it worth having a harbor the way we have it? What are the unintended consequences? And I don't know if you know, but Lisa Ketchum did a great presentation at the last MCC meeting on the hull armoring and the effects on the shoreline. I think we've got to rethink things. And if that means changes in the harbor for the greater good, then I think we have to consider it. And so as a sailor, you know, all right, I understand.
Well, no, I like your attitude. I mean, at the yacht club, we're sitting and watching and seeing how it's going to affect us. Surf rider, they would like to get the breakwater, you know, taken away. Kimberly Williams is a surf rider.
She
was at the harbor meeting. And, you know, talking to people like at the old Princeton Landing, some of the people were like, well, will we get that wave back in the harbor that we used to have? So I think the value of the fishing fleet is important, although crabbing season gets shorter and shorter, and salmon season has literally gone away this year. So it's an interesting time, and I think what Coastside Buzz does is not to have an opinion. It's about me getting people in the door so that they can click, learn, think, act, vote, and run for office.
Oh, yeah. We're going to need more people to run for office.
Right.
Our generation is aging out of here. There's a lot of stuff up in the air. Come on, people. The next generation, it's time for you to move in.
That's right. Well, that's what the Coastside Buzz is trying to do. That's our MO. And I have to say goodbye now because it's 10 o'clock. And Frank is letting us know that we need to say goodbye. Chris, Ruben, hope we did okay. Bye.